Second half kickoff here for the morning show, presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Dave and Logan along with you. Hey, coming up tonight, I'll be at the Touchdown Club of Athens from 6 until 7. So piggyback in the home team. Brandon Boykin will be there.
Love me some Brandon Boykin.
Pat Hodgson. And Georgia volleyball coach Tom Black.
Well, he's having
They're having a great year.
Absolutely.
They certainly are. Certainly are. Including getting a couple of sweeps this weekend. All right, the Dogs also had a big weekend on the football field, knocking off Auburn 21-14. Time to bring in Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com. Hey, Mike, good morning. How are you today?
Doing great, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. How are the travels over to Auburn there and back this weekend? Everything good?
I stayed in LaGrange. I'd never been there. That's got a beautiful downtown historic district. I had a really nice walk Saturday morning, and location was nice. Close enough to Auburn to get in and out. Able to stay up late Saturday night and work on some stories for after the game early Sunday morning.
Well, someone, myself, when I was a wee lad who used to live in LaGrange, and we have a lot of LaGrange folks that listen, we know that they appreciate you saying that about LaGrange and Troup County, which, of course, like
they
said.
Yeah, they got a cool statue downtown of Lafayette. You know, Lafayette, I guess. That was pretty interesting. I think he was a Civil War hero, if I recall the story. But always nice to see a town that takes care of and honors its downtown. Always appreciate seeing a town that puts itself first. Good way to go.
There you go. Let's talk a little bit about Saturday. What were your thoughts? I mean, Georgia goes and gets a hard-fought win, has to hold off Auburn, and coming out of there victorious. But give us your impressions of what you saw on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia had a nice twist to their offense. Obviously, their efficiency was critical, that they were able to make those red zone trips count.
Hey, Mike. Can we hang up and call you back? We've got a bad cell. Let us call you right back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry about that. We'll call Mike back here and get him on, and hopefully we'll get a different cell. It's not cracking up and popping like that one was. I was hoping it might go away, but it didn't. So we'll get Mike back on here in just a moment. As the Dogs get set to take on A&M Saturday, 3:30 for the final home game of the year. Senior day and all that good stuff. So let's try Mike again. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, definitely better. Although still a little bit of popping. I don't know what that is. That might be us. I don't know. We'll check it. But sorry to interrupt you there, but I wanted everyone that was listening to have a better listening experience, as they like to say. But you were talking about the game Saturday and your overall thoughts.
Yeah, the efficiency was impressive. You know, the red zone efficiency and making the most out of their possessions. I mean, I guess there was really only two offensive red zone trips because the Dominic Blaylock catch, it was big to see a pass over the top. You saw Georgia take some shots early, and paid off with a 51-yard touchdown to Dominic. And you know, I thought Jake looked good. You could see what all the hype was about with Auburn's front. I mean, they were legit. They did a nice job. And you know, Georgia had to play without Lawrence Cager most of the game, and also, you know, Cade Mays and Ben Cleveland. You know, two more linemen, you know, that were out. So, you know, I thought it was an impressive win. It was one that Georgia survived for sure.
Talking with Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com.
Yeah, Mike, there were some times a lot of three and outs by both teams, but would you say that was the best two things, the best defense that Georgia has played this season, and certainly the best it'll play the rest of the season? How would you gauge Auburn's defense in that stance?
Well, you know, yes, that team was the toughest matchup for sure. I don't know who Georgia's got left on their schedule if they win the SEC championship game, so it's a little early to say. I think they're the best team, you know, that they've played so far for sure. And you know, Texas A&M is just playing really well right now. The thing people need to, I think, remember, and the thing that I try to remind myself of is, you know, a lot of football is when you play a team and how they're playing when you play them. You know, for example, you know, I think this is a tough time to catch Texas A&M. I think they're coming around. I think they're playing well. I think Georgia would be better off if they'd be playing South Carolina this week than they were on October 12th, right? South Carolina's going to take a dip now. They've got their leading receiver, Brian Edwards. They're not the same team without him. You know, but Georgia caught South Carolina coming off a bye week. It was tough. In fact, what is it, five of the last six games, Georgia's played a team that was coming off a bye week, a team that had an extra week to prepare for what Georgia does, a team that was rested. Now, Georgia's had two bye weeks in there, but still, you know, Georgia's taken a lot of best punches from teams. You know, we always say, well, you know, you're going to get their best shot. Well, you probably really aren't. I mean, those teams play 12 games a year, too. But I think in Georgia's case, they really have gotten some teams' best shots. I think they got South Carolina's best punch. I think they might have got Auburn's best punch. And they might have got Florida's best punch. So they've taken a lot of best punches, and it shows because, I mean, guys, that fourth quarter, Auburn ran 30 plays for over 100 yards. Georgia ran 12 for 2 yards. I mean, I'm sure it was painful for Georgia fans to watch that fourth quarter. I know for me trying to write a game story, I just like, come on, guys, I won't have to rewrite this whole story. I mean, but for somebody that had a rooting interest, that had to be torturous.
Yes, it was.
So, you know, there's a lot of angst from some of the fans about Georgia's offense. And, again, as Logan was saying, this was a very good defense Georgia was going up against. Nine different three and outs on Saturday. What do you say when – because I know you get asked about it a lot, too, about Georgia's offense.
Well, I think offenses are married to defenses. I mean, I think Kirby knows he's got a good defense, and so they're not going to take any more chances on offense than they have to because they know they've got a great defense. And if you've got a two-score lead, then why would you, right? I mean, you just want to run clock. You want to keep the clock moving and you know, you punt the ball away. And I thought Jake Camarda had a huge game in that sense, flipping the field. And so the defense goes out there and takes care of business. You know, guys, here's an amazing stat I found last night. Georgia defense hasn't given up a play longer than 30 yards since the first quarter of the South Carolina game. I mean, Kirby says we're not bend but don't break, but that's exactly what they are. I mean, they are a bend but don't break defense. That's exactly what they are. So, and there's no shame in that. That's a good thing. It's a good thing when you don't give up big plays and when you don't break. That's great. But to your question offensively, I mean, this is about player development and the receiver realm. I mean, you got to have better options in this. Part of it's injuries. I mean, you lost your five top receivers. We've said that over and over. J.J. Holloman got kicked off the team. He was stupid. He hurt his teammates. He made a mistake. That damaged the team. He let his team down. Bad mistake. Tyler Simmons got injured the second game of the season. He's been playing his shoulder brace. He's not having the breakout year that many thought he would. He's still trying to help on special teams and with downfield blocking. But, you know, Cager with the shoulder, really, I guess since the Tennessee game, he's been in and out for the most part, hardly played at all in this game. And then you've got players who haven't developed under Cortez Ankton. I mean, it just haven't. So, I mean, you're a position coach. You get paid to develop these guys, and, you know, they're not making plays. That's all the position coach, I think. Now you've got a couple of talented freshmen that are coming in, and Blaylock and Pickens, but they're freshmen, and there's only so much they can do. So I know there's a lot of people that grab at the low-hanging fruit and want to, oh, well, it's Jake. It's not Jake Fromm. It's absolutely not Jake. Jake's every bit as good as he's ever been, but when guys aren't open, what is he supposed to do? And before you say run the ball, you know, think about Tua and what happened with Alabama there. And Kirby said it earlier in the year. I mean, the downside of the running quarterbacks is they do get hurt. And Georgia has had to be very mindful to keep Jake Fromm healthy all year. There's only one Jake. There's a big drop-off. And so that's been part of the game plan too, I believe, is to make sure you manage Jake Fromm and prevent him from getting hit. And that's why they run the football, to neutralize the pass rush. So it all kind of goes together. A lot of this is a personnel issue. Some of it is a player development issue. But this is the hand you've got. You're 9-1, and you're, you know, two wins away from, you know, playing LSU with a chance to go back to the college football playoff.
as angst as some Georgia fans may be about the offense, I think the defense looked extremely prepared on Saturday night. Whether it would be stopping Anthony Schwartz on that end around for a minus eight, I think it was DJ Williams on fourth down, the quick snap, who Georgia was able to scramble him and sack, or get him for a big loss. What does it speak about Dan Lanning preparing for an Auburn, a Gus Malzahn offense that threw some wrinkles Georgia's way, and Georgia seemed ready for every single one of them?
Well, I mean, I'll give more credit to Dan Lanning than anybody for player development at outside linebacker. But, you know, let's not kid ourselves here. The defensive coordinator is Kirby Smart. The guy that knows what Auburn and Gus Malzahn's doing before they do it is Kirby Smart. He's played against Gus how many times? So I don't want to take anything away from the job that Dan Lanning does, but Kirby Smart is the defensive guru, and Kirby Smart is the guy that's in charge of the offense and the defense. So give Kirby credit for the defense and give Kirby part of the blame, you know, for the offense, because he hires the position coaches and he does the recruiting. And, you know, he probably should have had that receiver position a little bit better stocked and probably should have seen to it that, you know, that they had a little more talent at receiver. So I give coordinators credit for play calling and things like that. But as far as the game plan and the preparation, I think the head coach gets the credit and the blame. So, but that to me, this was and again, I give Lanning credit because he's developed those outside linebackers. I think he's done an incredible job. The players like him. I think he's smart. I think he's the next guy to leave the staff and become a head coach somewhere. But that was Kirby. It was all Kirby on that defensive match with Gus Malzahn. And man, those guys really don't like each other. I mean, you know, Kirby plays a little better at the poker table when talking about another coach, but Gus Malzahn just does not like him, and to the point of being bitter and almost rude when you ask him about Kirby. I was disappointed. I asked Gus a question on a teleconference, and he just a real ass. So this guy's bitter, and I think his lack of charisma probably hurts him with his own fan base.
Well, speaking of charisma, what are your thoughts on Kirby's not safe for radio comment after the game? That felt calculated to me.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Was that emotion? Was there some calculation there? Maybe some of both?
Absolutely calculated. And listen, Kirby's smart with media and cameras. Everything is thought out. There's not much about Kirby that's spontaneous, I'll be honest with you. There's just not. Maybe when he got knocked over when he did the chest bump. I don't think he planned on that. But that was absolutely a Kirby moment. That was Kirby's way of putting an exclamation point on a really big game and a really big night. And, you know, as much as people want to complain, they should be thankful that Georgia found a way to win that game. You know, and they should be thankful that Georgia's found a way to get to this point with the personnel issues. Now, I mentioned, you know, Holloman's stupid mistake. Listen, that was a dumb. You lose your best receiver, guys, and a receiving core that's already lost your top four, you know, wideouts, and you just can't do that. And it happened. I mean, that was a dumb mistake by that kid and poor management by whoever's in charge of him on the team, not to have a better grip of what was going on with his life. Again, I take it back to the position coach. But Georgia's had to overcome a lot to get to this point. And the defense has done a great job, and I think Jake Fromm's done a great job. I think the offensive line's done a great job. There's running backs and the young receivers and the transfers. I mean, where would you be without Eli Wolf and Lawrence Cager right now if not for these guys? So as much as you want to pick at the team and say this and that, look, they're 9-1. They're not perfect. Kirby's told you all along they've got to get better. That's still true. You still hope that maybe Matt Landers can find his way out on the field and figure out what he's supposed to do and catch a football. He's been here 3 years now. Maybe he finally has a good game. If you can get some help in that receiving core, that'd be huge. But listen, A&M, looking at A&M, getting back to that, you're catching this team. I mean, they absolutely destroyed South Carolina. I mean, they ran for over 340 yards. They're strength on strength. You look at some numbers – and A&M's not too far off from where Georgia is statistically. They've played Clemson. They've played Alabama. There's nothing about Georgia that's going to make Texas A&M say wow when they come to Sanford Stadium. And they got a coach that's pretty well respected and makes even more money than Kirby Smart. That tells you at the same age, and that tells you a little something about him. So this is another really dangerous game. I don't think people are going to get too comfortable this Saturday either.
And shouldn't. And this is one that's been circled for a long time as a big trap game between Auburn and between Tech. And A&M's, like you said, they're good. They have a brutal schedule. But, yeah, mark me down as definitely nervous for Saturday. So hopefully the Dogs will take care of business. But you're absolutely right.
You know, you just get to Georgia Tech. I mean, Georgia Tech's such a pushover and such a, you know, terrible opponent and bad team. If you can just survive this game, you know, against A&M, you know, you can rest some guys against Georgia Tech probably in the second half and see what you got against LSU. Because, you know, LSU's showing some warts, too. Where do you go? 37 points to Ole Miss the other night? So, I mean, if Georgia can get to Atlanta, anything can happen there. But this game against A&M, though, this is dangerous. Because if you lose this game, this will tear the kids' hearts out because they'll know they're probably out of the playoff. And it wouldn't be the same Georgia team showing up Atlanta if they lose to A&M. So this is another season on the line. I just don't know how much they've got left in the tank. That's why I think Kirby threw down the F-bomb. You know, I think Kirby's going to do what he can do to keep his kids fired up and feeling good about themselves. Because, I mean, I'll be honest, this is the, you know, this fan base and the expectations and what the college football playoff has done to college football is just brutal. It is just, I don't think it's been good for college football at all. The pressure is just unbelievable. These guys are playing under more pressure than NFL teams.
I agree.
Just look what happened in Tuscaloosa. You know, if it's not for the college football playoff, and if Nick Saban and Alabama's not thinking that they've got to win by 50 points to stay in the race, there's no way they got a kid out there playing on a bad wheel. There's no way he's out there, not even starting the game. You know, it makes me mad to think about it. But, you know, the kid thinks he's got to play because Alabama thinks they've got to put up 60 because everybody else is putting up 50 and 60, and Ohio State's onside kicking in the second quarter against bad teams. And it's just – it isn't because nobody knows what it takes to get in because they change what the parameters are. Is it going to be the offense? Is it going to be the defense? Do you got to win your conference? Do you not got to win your conference? It changes, and it's just a horrible thing. It turns into – college football turns into the college football playoff race and the 7 or 8 teams that are in it, and then the other 120, which really don't seem to matter. And that's just not good. And I think it was a mistake to go to it in hindsight. I thought it last year when Georgia got left out by that 13-member committee and, you know, the Oklahoma and Florida and Georgia Tech AD getting to decide your future. I mean, this is just – we're going to look back on this and say this is one of the dumbest eras of college football.
I totally agree with a lot of what you said, especially the part about what the playoff has done to change the perspective. And it's not every team in the country, but for the top 10, 15 teams, it's not as much about winning your conference championship anymore as it is about getting to the playoff. And I know they go hand in hand for the most part, but at the same time, you know, we see the Minnesotas and the Baylors lose this weekend. And for a lot of their fans, they feel like their season's been wrecked. When they still
right.
have a great chance to win their conference championships and have a great season. But it's going to be looked at by a lot of their fans as they, we screwed up and we can't get to the playoff.
Well, and I'd say that for Georgia. I mean, Georgia just won the SEC East for the third straight year,
yep.
which hasn't been done since Steve Spurrier was the head coach in 94, 95, 96. And nobody's allowed to celebrate it. Kirby's saying we can't even talk about it. Because the focus and the goals and that's not Kirby's fault. Kirby's playing the game as it is. It's not Kirby Smart that's making the rules. I'm sure he wanted to celebrate it. I'm sure he would love to you know, for his fans to think, wow, we've got a coach that's done something that hasn't been done in over 20 years, and be celebrating the season and say, you know what, no matter what happens, man, this has been a great season for Georgia. They found a way to do something nobody else has done. They beat Notre Dame at home. You know, they beat Florida again. You know, they went to Auburn and beat another rival. But, no, that's not where we're at. Where we're at is saying, well, the win didn't look good enough, and now they've got to win this one because if they don't, they may not win the beauty contest. The Oklahoma or the Florida or the Georgia Tech AD may decide they're not good enough for the playoff. If they've got two losses, even if they win the SEC championship game and beat the number one team, you know, will the Georgia Tech AD give them the vote to go to the college football playoff? What about the Oklahoma AD who has to recuse himself when Oklahoma's being talked about but not when Georgia's being talked about? What if his one-loss team's in the playoff? What's he going to say about Georgia's two-loss resume? You've got to worry about those people on that committee. and they can say that they're, and I'm sure they're the most honest, you know, church-going, babysitting people in the world. But at the end of the day, they're getting paid by those institutions to do what's best for those institutions. And you have to imagine what you would do yourself. Put yourself in your shoes, or put yourself in their shoes. And what if Georgia, you're the Georgia AD, and you're on the college football playoff committee, and you get to decide if Florida or Georgia Tech is in a college football playoff instead of a team that has a very similar resume that could be argued. I mean, it is what it is, guys, and it's not good. There needs to be parameters, and there needs to be rules in place so that everybody knows what game they're playing before they sit down at the table and play it. Hey, look at me. I got a great hand. No, you don't. You're playing hearts. Oh, geez. No, tomorrow it's poker. Now it's bridge. What game are you playing? Yeah. Well, it's cards. It's all the same. It's not the same. Not the same. So I'm not, you know, and seeing Tua's injury, that's what made it really resonate again with me. Because I'm thinking to myself, there's only one reason that guy's playing. And he's playing because they think they got to run the score up.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Man, time flies. Thank you. We will see you over at the Mutt Spear later today, and we'll catch you again next week.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, appreciate it. Mike Griffith from the AJC's